The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. Quintessential phase.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy contains many contradictions on matters of fact and indeed fiction.
Anything that happens, happens.
But it's very clear upon one point. Nothing travels faster than the speed of light. Nothing, that is, with the possible exception of bad news, which obeys its own special laws. The Hinge-Friel people of Arkantufel Minor once tried to build spaceships that were powered by bad news, but they didn't work particularly well and were so extremely unwelcome whenever they arrived that there wasn't really much point setting off in the first place. The problem was that sublight spaceships, sent at great risk to do battle or business in distant parts, took thousands of years to get anywhere, and by the time they eventually arrived, assuming they ever did, the use of hyperspace travel had usually been invented, so that whatever battles the ships had been sent to fight in the first place had been taken care of, centuries earlier. This didn't, of course, deter their crews from wanting to fight the battles anyway. They'd had a couple of thousand years sleep, and they'd come a long way to do a tough job, and by Zarquan, they were going to do it. Once time travel was discovered, and battle started pre-erupting hundreds of years before the issues even arose, confusion reached quantum levels. And when the infinite improbability drive arrived, and whole planets started turning unexpectedly into banana fruitcake, the history faculty of the University of Maximegalon finally gave up and surrendered its buildings to the rapidly expanding faculty of Divinity and Water Polo, which had been after them for years. This almost certainly means that no one will ever know for sure where the Grebulons came from or exactly what it was they wanted. Their sublight ship had been travelling for millennia when a routine 10-yearly check of its systems resulted in a fairly significant error message. It slowly became clear that the ship's memory, all the way up to and including its central mission module, was missing, removed by the meteorite which had not only knocked a large hole in the ship, but also in that part of its equipment which was supposed to detect if the ship is hit by a meteorite. The Grebulon ship no longer had the faintest idea where its destination was or how to reach it. Tiny scraps of instructions were all it could reconstruct from the tatters of its memory.
Your year mission is to land a safe distance. Monitor it and...
In other words, complete garbage. The ship immediately revived all of its crew, but while in hibernation, all their memories, identities and instructions kept in the ship's central mission module for safekeeping had also been lost. Thus, they also had not the faintest idea of who they were or what they were doing.
Hello. Excuse me. Who are you? Does anybody know who I am?
I don't know who I am.
You don't know.
Before its core system shut down for good, the ship looked for somewhere to land and something to monitor. The planet it found to land on was so achingly far from the sun that should warm it that it took all of its Enviroform machinery and life support systems to render it in any way habitable. There were other nearer planets, but the ship's strategomat was obviously locked into lurk mode. As far as finding something to monitor was concerned, though, the Grebulons hit solid gold. Meanwhile, in another layer of the universe altogether, a scruffy figure in a dressing gown is about to be bitten very hard on the thigh.
Excuse me! Can you direct me to the information desk, please?
Last call for the Arcturus shuttle at gate 127. Passengers, please follow the slime trail to gate 127 for the Arcturus shuttle. Eden by. Thank you.
The planet of Nawat had been named after the first words of the earliest settlers to arrive there, after struggling across light years of the galaxy. The main town was called Owell. There weren't any other towns to speak of. Settlement there had not been a success.
Trank team to gate 208, please. A bog hog is loose in Terminal 5. Eden by. Thank you.
Could you tell me where the...
In an economy based almost entirely on revenge, the major activities pursued on Nawat were those of catching, skinning, and eating Nawatian bog hogs, which were the only form of animal life on Nawat. all other having long ago died of despair. The bog hogs are tiny, vicious creatures, and the small margin by which they fall short of being completely inedible was the margin by which life on the planet subsisted.
Excuse me, could you tell me where the information desk is? Good Lord.
The main trade on Nahuatl was in the skins of the Nahuatlian bog hog, but it wasn't successful because no one in their right minds would want to buy one. Making clothing out of a bog hog skin was an exercise in futility, since they were unaccountably thin and leaky. So what was the bog hog's secret of keeping warm? If anyone had ever learnt the language of the bog hogs, they would have discovered that there was no trick. The bog hogs were as cold and wet as anyone else on the planet. No one had had the slightest desire to learn the language of the bog hogs for the simple reason that these are creatures whose only form of communication is through biting each other very hard on the thigh.
I've got him! I've got him! I've got him now! He's heading for that boring-looking human in the dressing gown! Ow! Ah! My thigh! Oh,
ah! That really hurt. What was that?
Your bog hog. They do that.
Arthur Dent has been in some hell holes in his life, but never before in a spaceport with a sign saying, even travelling despondently is better than arriving here. To welcome visitors, the arrivals hall features a picture of the president of Nahuatl smiling. It was taken shortly after he shot himself, so although the photo has been retouched, the smile it wears is rather a ghastly one. The side of his head has been drawn back in crayon. The truth is that no one wants to be president of Nahuatl. There is only one ambition which anyone on the planet ever has, and that is to leave.
Good morning.
Yes?
My name is Arthur Dent. I hitched a ride on a robot freighter bound for these coordinates, expecting to find a planet called Earth. And instead I found a planet called Nahuatl, and this thing ran up and bit me in the thigh.
A bog hog? Yes, yes, they do that. What coordinates are on the flight plan?
ZZ9 plural Z alpha.
Well, those are the coordinates of Nahuatl. You've arrived. Welcome. Eat and bye.
The thing is, you see, the shapes of the continents, everything really, tells me that this is definitely the Earth. But it most definitely is not. And my hitchhiker's guide doesn't work very well here, so I can't find out what's going on. Look.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Anything that, in happening, causes something else to happen.
See?
One planet may look like another and occupy the same coordinates in space-time, but what coordinates it occupies in probability is anybody's guess.
But it's taken me a year to get here. I'm looking for somebody. Somebody I met on the Earth. Here. Or it was here.
Lost on a hyperspace jump, was she?
Yes. That's right. Her name was...
Fenchurch. Female of your species.
Good grief, yes.
One minute, she was sitting next to you in a slump jet out of Prelium Tarn. The next minute, the ship did a normal hyperspace hop, and she was gone. Her name wasn't even on the passenger list.
Hang on a minute.
You've tried every space line office between here and Ursa Minor looking for her. Now, finally, you thought you'd try going back to the place you first met her.
Surely you haven't.
No, sorry. Haven't seen her.
So how?
I'm a telepath. I can read your mind. And in answer to your current thought, I don't have the time to go and tie a knot in my reproductive organs.
Oh. I'm sorry.
Evidently no one has explained this to you properly. Where's your ticket?
Here.
She originated in galactic sector ZZ9 plural Z alpha, yes? Now, check the small print on the back of the ticket.
Entities whose lifespans originate in any of the plural zones are advised not to travel in hyperspace and do so at their own risk. Please do not eat this ticket.
You need to be careful, too. It can happen to you.
I wish it would.
I know. You would like a cup of tea.
You have tea?
No, I was just noting the fact that you would like one, whatever it is.
Oh.
Look, in the absence of your planet, I suggest you find somewhere to come to terms with your loss. A place to stay.
A hotel room?
Good grief, not here. Not if you value your sanity, no. But your luck's in, because I'm also a resettlement officer. So, what sort of thing are you looking for?
Before we start, are you likely to suggest a place called Stavromula Beta?
Something very nasty happens to you on Stavromula Beta.
Yes, but how... Oh, ah, right. I don't want to be anthropic, but I'd quite like to live somewhere where the people look vaguely like me. Sort of human.
Got any skills? A trade?
Oh dear, not really. I came from a world which had cars and computers and ballet and Armagnac, but left to my own devices, I couldn't build a toaster. I can just about make a sandwich and that's it. I finance my travel by donating to tissue banks. Yeah, it's amazing there's this much of me left, frankly.
Right. Simple culture, low unemployment, picnic food. Here, try this.
Bartledown?
It's got oxygen. It's got green hills. It's got sliced bread. And the people look like you.
Looks a bit boring.
I'm sorry, I was going by appearances. Look, there's a whole galaxy of stuff out there. Think about it.
I know, I do. The trouble is that this particular incarnation of the galaxy seems to lack two things. The world I was born on and the woman I love. Actually, what I really need is, well, guidance and advice. I did look them up on the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Under guidance, it said, see under advice. Under advice, it said, see under guidance. It's been doing a lot of that kind of stuff recently.
Why don't you try Hawalius? It's populated entirely by oracles and soothsayers, and has really excellent bathroom facilities. It could be just what you're looking for. Brochure?
Thanks.
I'm sorry this is the wrong planet. Really, I am. Eat and bite.
Oh, it's the right planet, all right. Right planet, wrong universe.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has, in what we laughingly call the past, had a great deal to say on the subject of parallel universes. Very little of this is, however, at all comprehensible to anyone below the level of advanced God. And since it is now well established that all known gods came into existence a good 3 millionths of a second after the universe began, rather than, as they usually claimed, the previous week, they already have a great deal of explaining to do as it is, and are therefore not available for comment on matters of deep physics at this time.
Anything that, in happening, causes something else to happen, causes something else to happen.
The first thing to realize about parallel universes, the guide says, is that they are not parallel. Neither are they, strictly speaking, universes either. Any given universe is not actually a thing as such, but just a way of looking at what is technically known as the WSOGMM, or whole sort of general mishmash. The whole sort of general mishmash doesn't actually exist either, but it is the sum total of all the different ways there would be of looking at it if it did. You can slice the whole sort of general mishmash any way you like, and you will generally come up with something that someone will call home. There is, for example, the Earth that Arthur Dent grew up on, where he once met a girl called Tricia McMillan at a party in Islington, and had her snatched away by Zaphod Beeblebrox, a tall man with very broad shoulders, on each of which was a head, one perfectly visible, the other camouflaged under a birdcage with a tea towel flung over it.
Hold the phone! This is a face in a million. Does perfection have another name?
Tricia McMillan.
Tricia McMillian. Billion. Trillion. Kid, if I followed you home, would you keep me?
I'd rather go somewhere else.
You want excitement, adventure, really wild things?
What do you have in mind?
Twice as much as the other guy, because when Zarkon made you, baby, he made a laser beam.
He did?
He did. And he set you on stun. Free-ow! I'd grow back my third arm for you.
Ooh.
Oh, baby, you make me see stars. How about I show you some planets?
Hey, I've got a doctorate in astrophysics. Be careful what you promise.
It's nothing I can't deliver, angel lips. What say we make like Alosimanian polar bears and break the ice?
Will I need to get my bath?
Ah, we gotta go before you have to be back in heaven. Eddie, beam us up!
If you're in the mood, two-headed dude!
That particular Earth was demolished by the Vogons as part of an intergalactic traffic calming initiative, and Arthur and Tricia, or Trillian, were the only human survivors. After several adventures, that particular Trillian became a successful intergalactic reporter for the Sidereal Daily Mentioner. However, on yet another parallel Earth in the whole sort of general mishmash, a blonder, more American-sounding Tricia McMillan utterly failed to get off with Zaphod Beeblebrox at a party in Islington. The precise connection between that event and the fact that Tricia McMillan's particular Earth did not get demolished by the Vogons is currently sitting at number 4,763,984,132 on the research project priority list at what was once the history department of the University of Maxi Megalon. And no one currently at the prayer meeting by the poolside appears to feel any sense of urgency about it. However, like her parallel intergalactic travelling counterpart, Trillian, the Earthbound Tricia McMillan became a reporter. In the process, she learnt two things. One was that as a scientist working in the popular arts, you can make a lot of money covering some very dumb subjects. The other was that you should never go back for your bag.
Miss Andrews, you've agreed to do this interview because you have a new astrology book out. You and Your Stars, the follow-up to You and Your Black Holes.
But there's no such thing as a free launch, right?
No, quite. Now, putting aside your relationship with the White House for the moment, let's talk about your area of so-called expertise. Last week, astronomers announced that there's a 10th planet discovered out beyond the orbit of Pluto, Persephone.
Rupert. They've nicknamed it after some astronomer's parrot.
Yes, but that must put your astrology calculations out, mustn't it? Maybe you knew what happened when Neptune was in Virgo, but what happens now that Rupert is rising?
Well, it doesn't change the essential movement of the planets. Whatever influence it has had on events is already factored in.
If you'd known about Rupert 3 years ago, might the president be eating boysenberry flavor ice cream on Thursdays rather than on Fridays?
Miss
McMillan, I'm aware that you have a degree in physics, astrophysics, and I can assure you my...
This is most interesting.
Most interesting.
It may help solve our problem.
Yes.
Could be just the answer we Grebulons have been looking for.
Yes.
But it's not a science.
Could it?
Well, of course it could.
Scientific methodology to it.
Which one are you?
I don't know.
And you?
I don't know either.
Who are you?
I don't know. Well, you must be superior. You're shouting.
Yes, shouting.
Yes, and I am taller. Does that count?
Taller. Much, much taller. Well, how should I know?
We have found much to monitor from the third planet called the Earth.
Earth.
It has provided some interesting information.
Yes, information. Yes. All New York police lieutenants are fat and bald and suck lollipops.
Lollipops.
Yes. It is a mistake to give a glove puppet bear a water pistol.
Not all over me.
Oh. And the Teletubbies are very picky eaters.
More than that, we have learnt that we are stranded on Persephone, the 10th planet popularly called... Rupert.
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 And that events here are influenced by the movement of the planet around this sun. And I have had an idea.
So you are in charge.
Club Alpha, please.
One of the extraordinary things about life is the sort of places where it's prepared to put up with living. Anywhere it can get some kind of a grip, whether it's the intoxicating seas of Santraginus V, where the fish never seem to care whatever the heck kind of direction they swim in, the firestorms of Frastra, where they say life begins at 40,000 degrees, or just burrowing around in the lower intestine of a rat for the sheer unadulterated hell of it, life will always find a way of hanging on in somewhere. It will even live in New York, though that's hard to know why. Some of the things that live in the lower intestines of rats would disagree, but when it's autumn in New York, the air smells as if someone's been frying goats in it. And if you're keen to breathe, the best plan is to open a window and stick your head in a building.
Miss McMillan, welcome to Alpha. Miss Andrews is waiting for you.
Thank you. Stavro not here today?
He's in London. The new club opens there next week.
Oh, you mean I can crawl home after a night out without having to endure business class?
Better believe it.
Miss Andrews, I got your note. You were upset about something in the interview?
Excuse me?
The note said, meet me at Club Alpha, not happy, Gail Andrews.
I was really happy with the interview.
What?
Of course astrology isn't a science. It's just a set of rules like chess or tennis or... What's the thing the British have?
Self-loathing?
Parliamentary democracy. The rules just kind of got there. Astrology rules you stars and planets as a way of thinking about a problem, which lets a shape emerge.
Miss Andrews, Gail...
When you got so emotionally focused on stars and planets this morning, it seemed to me you weren't steamed about astrology, but actual stars and planets. So I asked you here to see if you were okay.
Oh.
There's something in your past that still upsets you about astronomy?
I made a decision once. I'm not sure it was the right one.
Who is? Every moment of every day, every decision we make opens some doors and closes others.
Quite a few years ago, I met a guy at a party.
Mm-hmm.
He said he was from another planet.
Okay.
And did I want to go there with him? I think he had two heads.
Two heads?
It was that kind of party. One was disguised as a parrot in a cage covered up. It was asleep, I think.
Right.
Hey, I've got a doctorate in astrophysics. Be careful what you promise.
It's nothing I can't deliver, angel boobs. Let's go before you want it back in heaven.
I'll need my bag.
Nah, I'm on a meter! Let's just rearrange the alphabet and put you and I together.
I'll get the bag. Really, I won't be a minute.
Nothing personal, sweet lips, but a minute was all I had. Ciao. Beam me up, Eddie.
Whatever you say, El Presidente!
Now, although it was that kind of party, I know he wasn't of this world. And hardly a moment goes by that I don't wonder about some other me. A me that didn't go back for her bag. I feel like she's out there somewhere, and I don't know, I'm walking in her shadow.
Are you married, Tricia?
I came close a few times, mostly because I wanted to have a kid. But every guy ended up asking why I was constantly looking over his shoulder. At one point, I even thought I might just go to a sperm bank and have somebody's child at random. But I never went and found out for real. That's why I gave up astrophysics and went into television. Nothing is real.
Something else is wrong, isn't it?
Gail, I didn't just come over from London to record our interview. I had another reason. NBS asked if I'd like to try for Mo Minetti's breakfast show job.
They asked you? I heard she was leaving the show to have a baby.
Yeah, in spite of the money they were offering for her to have it on the show.
Huh.
Anyway, the car was late picking me up, and then I realized I'd left my bag in my room.
But you didn't go back for it?
No. I just turned up, sat down, and they ran the auto cue. And I couldn't read it.
Why not?
My contact lenses were in my bag, in the hotel.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't be. Look, I'm really sorry about this morning.
Don't say another word.
Thanks. I want to see if I can still get tonight's red eye back to Heathrow. Goodbye, Gail. And thanks.
Oh, hey, don't forget your bag.
There are times when you do not go back for your bag, and other times when you do. I just need to figure out which.
Thanks to modern hyperphysics, it's becoming clear that the universe consists of a complex web of dimensional layers which duplicate certain levels of existence and form branches to others. Evidence for this is legion, from the way in which a long unused phrase such as total perspective vortex suddenly crops up three times in as many crosswords, to the fact that Zaphod Beeblebrox, having left Tricia McMillan behind at that legendary party, was, due to the vagaries of improbability, instantly transported to the same party on a different Earth in a parallel universe where he was A, too drunk to notice he'd just eaten the same vol-au-vent twice, and B, struck by a dark-haired girl who looked very familiar and did not need the constant accompaniment of a handbag. That same Zaphod Beeblebrox it was who more recently returned Arthur Dent to the planet Cricket, delivered Ford Prefect to the nearest planet with a pool table, amicably parted with Trillian at the Sidereal Daily Mentioner recruiting office, and is now seeking some kind of truth and reconciliation with his past. A search which has followed a trail of rapacious economic plunder from an H-shaped building on Ursa Minor to an H-shaped building on Sacro Pilia Hentia, where a figure wearing a fast food delivery service uniform and two jet bike helmets carries a large insulated satchel into the reception area.
Hey, Frood, this is it, right? Megadodo Publications.
Let's not get hung up on names, dude. Just chill and be awed, because you are standing in the home of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the most totally remarkable book in the whole of the known universe.
Hey, Frosty Cool Bro. Now, I got a pizza delivery for, Zani Whoop. Double anchovy, Caesar salad, easy on the squid liver.
No problemo. Elevator to his new office on the 23rd floor, make a left at the water cooler, third door on the right.
Hey, sure thing, my man.
Hello, I'm to be your Sirius Cybernetics Corporation Happy Vertical Beetle Transporter 2.
23rd floor and step on it, meat crate.
Stepping with pleasure.
Mr. Van Harl, reception. He's on his way up.
Two heads, three arms. It's your boy, all right.
Thank you. Have the account's mainframe booted up and alert security.
Remind them to bring an extra half pair of handcuffs.
Yes, sir.
It's open, Zaphod.
Do all four of my eyes deceive me? I think not. Not this time, Zani Whoop.
10 out of 10 for observation. Why don't you host to the zap gun, put down your pizza, and I'll pour us a drink.
Make that two. I waited a long time to find out what's been going on, and I'll need to be very, very drunk to understand it.
In your case, Zaphod, That's the only way you could understand it.
And this, is a very spicy pizza. It's going to take a lot of washing down. I'd offer you some, but I kind of hate to share.
Cheers. Or should I say, in your case, chin chin.
Funny.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, when pressed, locates the planet Hawali as far out on the eastern rim of the galaxy. It's highly renowned for its abundance of oracles, seers, and soothsayers. It's also highly renowned for its fast food franchises, because most mystics are utterly incapable of cooking for themselves.
Anything that in happening causes itself to happen again, happens again. Though not necessarily in chronological order.
If you land on Hawalius and pick up one of its tourist brochures, the drift like snow in the litter-strewn corners of its spaceport, you will find it witters on about the ancient mystical arts of the seers, while wildly over-representing the level of accommodation available. In fact, the generally uncared-for condition of its biggest town suggests that some sort of calamity has befallen it.
Excuse me, why are you boarding up your shop?
We're going out of business. No call for us profits anymore.
Why that?
Hold the end of this plank and I'll show you.
Righto.
Where are you? No.
Here. A sub-ether video.
Well, it's not a toaster. What's this?
In a speech he will give tomorrow, the Vice President of Pavla Vegas will announce that he is a woman.
And this?
Next month's royal wedding between Prince Gid of the Sufling Dynasty and Princess Huli of Raul Alpha will be the most spectacular ceremony yet witnessed in the Pajangi territory. Our reporter, Trillium Astra, sends us this report.
It's Trillium.
Well, Crot, the scene here in the middle of next month is absolutely incredible.
You see what we have to contend with?
I was watching that.
You and everyone else. That's why this place is like a ghost town. Every vid reporter is a prophet now. Quick bit of time travel, quick hop across dimensions, there it is. The future, the past, several versions of someone you know.
Yes, that's what I mean. That was someone I know.
Princess Huli? If I had to stand around saying hello to everyone who's known Princess Huli, I'd need a new set of lungs.
No, the reporter. Her name's Trillian. I don't know where she got the Astra from. She's from the same planet as me. I wondered where she'd got to.
Oh, she's water all over the continuum these days, gallivanting here and there through space-time. She wants to settle down and find herself a nice steady era, that young lady does.
Is she, always dark-haired?
Oh, I don't watch this stuff. Thank the great green arkle sees you.
No, of course not. It's just that I have seen a Trillian. Trisha McMillan, blonde, and sort of American. On Earth, where I came from. But in another dimension, possibly.
That's just what I was saying. Look, I'm not here to sort out your dimensional issues. I'm busy going out of business. For what it's worth, here's a bit of free guidance.
It'll all end in tears. Probably already has.
All right. Now hold the plank steady while I nail it. Oh, God, my thumb!
Are you all right?
I suggest you trot along now. I may need to speak in tongues for a few minutes. Please?
Oh. All right, then.
Try that cave over there. That's only a suggestion, mine. Not formal oracular advice.
Thank you. Bye.
The days are long gone when the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy building was the third hippest place to be in the whole of Ursa Minor, as its offices are often shifted at very short notice from planet to planet for reasons of local climate, hostility, power bills, or tax. They're always reconstructed precisely the same way, as for many of the company's employees, the layout of their offices represented the only constants they knew in a distorted personal universe. Unless you had your own personal universe inside your office, of course. The Hitchhiker's Guide building is currently located in the city of Antwelm, on the world known as Sacwopilia-Henshire, and Ford Prefect has entered it in his usual way, via the ventilation system rather than the main lobby, because the main lobby is no longer peopled by real people with unkempt hair and a relaxed attitude to footwear, but patrolled by melon-sized flying security robots whose job it is to quiz incoming employees about their expense accounts. Ford Prefect's expense accounts are notoriously complex and difficult affairs, and he's found on the whole that the lobby robots do not fully comprehend his understated approach to bookkeeping. He prefers, therefore, to make his entrance via the ventilation shafts leading to the building's higher floors.
Ow! Holy Belgium, I swear they've been saving money by rebuilding the floors lower.
Ford is carrying a satchel in which is a lightweight throwing towel, a number 3 gauge prizing tool, and a toy bow and arrow bought in a street market for reasons which will shortly become apparent.
Intruder, your presence has been detected. Have your sleeves rolled for barcode scan and your expenses ready for inspection. Do not attempt to run. Do not attempt to offer bribes.
Leave the suction cup on that aim, and if its movement sensors are the usual serious cybernetics garbage...
I detect your movement. Do not attempt to run. Empty your pockets.
Robot diverted. Aim towel.
Emergency. Third party vision circuit impairment.
Grab the bot. Prizing tool. Power switch off. Logic circuit card.
Logic is a wonderful thing, but it has certain drawbacks. Anything that thinks logically can be fooled by something else which thinks at least as logically as it does. The easiest way to fool, say, a completely logical robot is best demonstrated by the famous herring sandwich experiments, conducted a millennia ago at MISPWOSO, the Maxi Megalon Institute of slowly and painfully working out the surprisingly obvious. A robot was programmed to believe that it liked herring sandwiches, after which a herring sandwich was placed in front of it, whereupon the robot said to itself,
"Ah, herring sandwich! I like herring sandwiches!"
It would then tip down and scoop up the herring sandwich in its herring sandwich scoop and straighten up again. Unfortunately, the robot was fashioned in such a way that the action of straightening up caused the herring sandwich to slip off its scoop and fall on the floor, whereupon the robot said to itself,
"Ah, herring sandwich! I like herring sandwiches!"
and repeated the loop over and over and over again. The thing that prevented the herring sandwich from crawling off in search of other ways of passing the time was that it was only marginally less alert to what was going on than the robot. The scientists at the Institute thus discovered the driving force behind all change, development, and innovation in life was boredom, or rather the practical function of boredom. In a fever of excitement, they then went on to discover other emotions like irritability.
Who left this herring sandwich here?
Depression.
I drop that sandwich again, I'm going to switch myself off.
Reluctance.
This sandwich has got carpet fluff all over it.
Ickiness.
It's got green stuff growing on it too.
And so on. The next big breakthrough came when they stopped using herring sandwiches, whereupon a whole welter of new emotions became suddenly available to them for study, such as relief, joy, friskiness, appetite, satisfaction, and most important of all, the desire for happiness. This was the biggest breakthrough of all. Now all that robots needed was the capacity to be either bored or happy. They would then work the rest out for themselves. The robot which Ford has trapped under his towel is a logical, if momentarily unhappy, robot. It's happy when it can move about. It's happy when it can see other things. It's particularly happy when it can see other things moving about, particularly if they're doing things they shouldn't do, because it could then, with considerable delight, report them. But Ford will soon fix that. His logic is that by reconfiguring its logic circuit, he will have a robot that is logically and ecstatically happy to help him do things he really shouldn't do.
Power on, towel off.
Mr. Prefect, sir, I'm so happy to see you.
Good to see you too, little fella.
My fulfillment is uncontained at your return. I am so happy. I could clear all your expenses without requiring adequate proofs of purchase.
Don't let me stop you.
Oh, sadly, such clearance is restricted to the editor or the accounts computers.
Well, if the editor won't clear them, and trust me, he won't, we'll try the computer.
Goody, goody. Where shall we start?
Here, with you telling me what's going on.
Oh, just the nicest of all possible things. May I sit on your lap?
No!
Oh, I'm overjoyed to be spurned like this, especially when you shouted at me, "Spurn me again, please."
Listen, something's changed, hasn't it? Something big.
Oh, yes, in the most fabulous and wonderful way. I feel so good about it. It was scrumptious before, but now it's yummy-licious. Please shout at me again, go on.
Just tell me what's happened.
Thank you.
Please.
The guide has been taken over. There's a wonderful new management.
What new management? When? Never mind. Does that door still lead to the editor's office?
Why, yes. It's all so gorgeous I could just melt.
Look, be quiet, will you? What's your name?
Part number 223219B, reorder code Zegbot Rev B. Fruity or what?
No. What would be a good name for you? Emily Saunders. No. Her dog, perfect. So, Colin.
I am Colin. Colin, the security robot called Colin. After a dog. Woof, woof. God.
Colin, shut up. There's a battery of laser guns linked to scanners in that doorframe. It's meant to catch anyone entering who isn't carrying pages of fresh copy, like me.
Exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, so you're going to draw the laser fire while I break through the door and tuck and roll behind the drinks trolley. Then I'll be on my knees by his desk and in a perfect position to open negotiations. Now, I may have to cry a bit, but you mustn't worry. That's just the grovelling phase of the negotiations.
But...
Right, ready. After three.
But...
Three! Whoa!
Ford Prefect. I've been expecting you.
Will even a groveling phase in negotiations cut any ice with Mr. Zarniwoop Van Hal? What has happened to Zaphod Beeblebrox? And can Arthur Dent find a purpose to his life, let alone the universe and everything? Parallel zones of enlightenment await in the next temporal layer of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
In that episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams, William Franklin was the book and Rula Lenske was the voice of the bird. Simon Jones played Arthur Dent, Jeffrey McGiven, Ford Prefect, Mark Wing Davy, Zaphod Beeblebrox, Susan Sheridan, Trillian, Sandra Dickinson, Tricia McMillan, and Jonathan Price was Zarniwoop. Roger Gregg played Eddie, Andy Taylor and Mike Fenton Stevens, the Grebulons, John Challis played the Prophet, Mitch Benn, the Information Creature, Lorelei King was Gail Andrews, and Andrew Seacom, Colin the Robot. The announcer was John Marsh, the surround mix was by Paul Dealey, and additional effects by Ken Humphrey and Paul Weir. The script editor was John Langdon, and the music was by Paul Wicks Wickens. The production manager was Joe Wheeler, and the production assistant was Susie Matthews. The programme was adapted, directed and co-produced by Dirk Maggs. The producers were Helen Chatwell and Bruce Hyman, and it was an above-the-title production for BBC Radio 4. Listeners are reminded not to try and reprogram Sirius cybernetic security bots. They contain no user-serviceable parts, and tampering with their happiness circuits will invalidate the warranty.